recognize who it is. It's Mystery Man. After all this time, even though I'm having a great time with Travis, I can't help but stare at the handsome man with black hair settling down at one of the round wooden tables. Travis is amazing, but there was no electric jolt when I laid eyes on him. I haven't felt that once since the night I met Mystery Man, what feels like an eternity ago. But even though I remember him quite well, he either doesn't see me or he doesn't remember me, because he doesn't even glance in my direction. Just as well. Travis is great, and I don't need any distractions from a sexy guy who clearly isn't interested in me. "Hey," Travis says, his smoldering blue eyes locking on mine. I'm on, like, my third cup of coffee, and I'm never going to be able to sleep, but I kind of want to keep this going. What do you think about heading somewhere else for dinner? I smile to myself because I had been contemplating the same thing. I would love dinner. Yeah? His whole face lights up. That is awesome. Travis looks so thrilled that I forget all about Mystery Man entirely. I can't wait to have dinner with this guy. We can compare bad date notes and share a bottle of wine. I'm really glad I didn't give up on dating. Bonnie was right. It really is a numbers game. Even though she was wrong about Dr. McHottie. But then the smile on Travis's face fades away. Suddenly, he is staring at me with a look of horror on his face. His skin turns the same color as the cream on the table. "Sydney," he gasps. I can't figure out why he looks so horrified. Then I look down at the bloodstains on my shirt. "Oh my God!" I clasp a hand over my nose. "I'm so sorry, This is just great. I haven't had one of my infamous, epic nosebleeds in over a year. And of course it would happen during the best date I've had in years. I snatch a few tissues from the dispenser on the table, trying to sop up the blood on my face. "Let me just go to the bathroom and..." And then something really awful happens. Before I can even get out my sentence, Travis's eyes roll up in his head. And then he slides out of his seat and collapses to the floor, his head hitting the tiles with a loud clunk. Wonderful. The best date I have had in years, and I made him faint from my stupid bloody nose. The entire coffee shop goes silent, staring at me with my horror show of a bloody nose and my date lying unconscious on the floor. One woman screams, which I honestly feel is a little unnecessary. "It's okay," I manage, a tissue still pressed to my nose. "Everything's fine, I just..." That's when I notice that Mystery Man has stood up and is maneuvering between tables, coming toward me. Wow, he got to see my epic nosebleed too. This is just getting better and better. Mystery Man crouches next to Travis on the floor, who is starting to come to, groaning and rubbing his head. Mystery Man frowns down at him.
"Are you okay, sir?" he asks.
"Yeah." Travis's eyelids flutter and he rubs his head again. He's trying to sit up.
"What happened?"
"Looks like you had a vasovagal episode and fainted," Mystery Man says. "I'm a physician and I just wanted to make sure you're okay. We can call an ambulance if you'd like."
"A vaso what?" Travis rubs his head. "No, I'm okay."
He looks over at me and flinches.
"Sorry, I'm just not a fan of blood, you know?"
Mystery Man glances back at me, and for a split second he rolls his eyes. But then he turns back to Travis and starts asking him a bunch of questions about how his head and neck feel and if he can move his arms and legs. Travis seems fine, although embarrassed. He's not looking at me the way he was before. Actually, he seems like he's avoiding looking at me entirely.
"I'm okay," Travis tells Mystery Man. "Honestly, you should help her."
"I'm fine," I assure him, even though I've now gone through about 5 tissues in my attempt to sop up all the blood. My blouse is definitely ruined, at least for now. I've got some good tricks for getting out bloodstains that I've picked up over the years.
"You don't look fine," Travis points out.
He is still avoiding looking at me,
and his face is a few shades too pale. Sweat is beaded along his hairline. "It's nothing to worry about," I say. "This happens to me sometimes." If there was anything I could have said to make it less likely Travis would ever want to see me again, I have definitely hit on it.
"Listen, Sydney," Travis clears his throat. "You look like you need some time to recover from all this, so why don't we do dinner some other time?"
"Sure," I say. "How about on Friday?"
Maybe.
Travis yanks his jacket off the back of his chair, his hands shaking slightly. "I'll text you through the app, or something." He stuffs his arms into the sleeves of his jacket. "Anyway, bye." It would not be an exaggeration to say that Travis ran out of the coffee shop as fast as he possibly could. He didn't even pay for his share of the coffee. And now I am left with my bloody nose, a check for about 6 coffees and multiple muffins and danishes, a bunch of crumpled up tissues covered in dried blood, and Mystery Man staring at me. "I don't think we're having dinner on Friday," I finally say. Mystery Man bursts out laughing.
I got that sense, yeah.
It's not funny. Although, against my will, I find my lips twitching slightly. Believe it or not, until my nose started gushing blood, that was the first good date I'd been on in a long time.
"With that guy?"
Mystery Man looks in the direction of the door where Travis vanished, never to be seen again.
"I find that hard to believe. You're much better off without him. I mean, what grown man faints at the sight of a bloody nose? Sort of pathetic, don't you think?"
"Well..."
"Really," he says. "You don't want to have kids with a guy like that. What's he going to do when your kid gets bopped in the nose with a soccer ball? You dodged a bullet."
"Maybe."
"Also, he stuck you with the check. What a jerk."
Mystery Man reaches into his back pocket and pulls out his wallet. He grabs enough bills to more than cover our coffees and pastries, then tosses them on the table.
"How hard is that?"
The twitching in my lips blossoms into a tiny smile. "Thank you." I pull the tissue away from my nose. It looks like the blood is finally stopping. Why not? It already did its damage.
"There's a souvenir shop next door," Mystery Man tells me. "Let me get you a new shirt so you don't have to walk home with blood all over you."
"Seriously? Those places are a ripoff. You're going to pay a fortune." He shrugs.
"Better than being covered in blood, right?"
When he sees the hesitation on my face, he adds,
"I insist."
I can't help but smile. "Okay, then."
"And then," he says, "if you're feeling up to it, I'd love to take you to dinner."
I stare at him, stunned. Is he seriously asking me out on a date after witnessing a volcano of blood literally erupting from my nostrils? But he doesn't look like he's kidding. His nice brown eyes are focused on mine, and there's a suggestive smile playing on his lips. "Well," I say, "okay." Mystery Man's smile widens to show off his straight white teeth. And once again, I get that jolt of electricity. Travis seemed great, but I didn't have that same electrical attraction with him. That's the sort of thing you don't get to experience very often. And it seems like Mystery Man feels the same way about me after all. Maybe that stupid nosebleed was the best thing that ever happened to me. "I'm Sydney," I say.
"Nice to meet you, Sydney," he says. "I'm Tom. Tom Brown."
Chapter 23. Before. Tom. It's been a week, and apparently no arrests have been made in the murder of Brandy Healy. Chief Driscoll came back to the high school a second time and called several students back down to the principal's office, but I didn't make the cut this time. They're still looking for Brandy's mysterious boyfriend without much luck. Most of the people they call down are Brandy's close friends. The only person I know well on the list is Slug. I can't even imagine why the police want to talk to him about Brandy. He barely knew her. Not only has the chief not questioned me again, But he asked me personally if I would escort his daughter home from school every day until he catches the monster who killed Brandy. I still have to tutor, but Daisy waits around. She doesn't seem to mind. She sits in the school library, quietly reading one of her thick paperbacks. Whenever she is concentrating on something, she sticks her tongue out slightly. It's adorable. Walking Daisy home every day is something I can look forward to. Although today, I'm looking forward to something else. In our biology lab today, we're dissecting a fetal pig. I have been waiting for this particular dissection lab for months, and it will only be slightly ruined by the fact that Allison is my lab partner. I didn't know it was possible, but Allison has been even colder to me since Brandy's body was found. She can barely even look at me anymore, and when she does, there's venom in her eyes. This is our first biology lab since it all happened, and I'm half expecting to find out she's asked the teacher to switch partners. That would be okay with me. More than okay, even. But no such luck. When I get to the lab, Allison is already in her seat. "Hi, Allison," I say, in my most friendly voice. She stares at me, as if astonished I would have the audacity to say hello to her. "Let's get this over with," she grumbles. I already read the textbook the night before to prepare for the lab. So when the teacher sets down the tray with the tiny pig lying on it, its eyes squeezed shut, its facial features nearly perfectly formed, I know exactly what to do. But I'm trying to make nice with Allison, so I slide the scalpel in her direction. "You can do the honors," I say. "No, thanks." She pushes it back to me. "You can go ahead and do it." "You sure?" "Absolutely." And then she mumbles under her breath, "You always do." I'm not going to say it doesn't bother me that Allison is sitting next to me, silently judging me, while I'm doing nothing more than the work required to get an A in biology lab. She should feel lucky I'm her lab partner. I'm carrying her. She doesn't seem interested in the dissections at all. She doesn't seem to even want to look when I unravel the fetal pig's intestines. If it weren't for me, she wouldn't even pass the class. And yes, I enjoy these labs. So what? Is there anything so wrong about that? The hour passes by quickly, and near the end, Mrs. Shipley comes by to check our work. She sees the organs laid out carefully and flashes me an approving look. "Good job, Tom, Allison." "Tom did all the work," Allison speaks up. "I mostly just sat here." Mrs. Shipley doesn't seem to know what to make of this admission. "Did he?" "Yes," she confirms. "He enjoys it so much, you see. I wouldn't want to take that away from him." Mrs. Shipley's forehead wrinkles. "Well, you should both try to share the work equally. It's only fair." With those words of wisdom, she wanders off to the next table. Allison is looking down at her nails, which are clipped very short. She's been making snide comments about my expertise in lab the whole time we've been partners, and I'm getting sick of it. "What the hell is wrong with you?" I snap at her. She looks up at me, her eyelashes fluttering. "There's nothing wrong with me." The way she says it makes my whole body go cold. She's never liked me, but somehow it's gotten to a whole other level recently, especially in the last week. But I can't let Allison bother me. The school day is almost over, and then I'll get to see Daisy and walk her home. Allison is not going to take that away from me. She at least helps me get cleaned up, and after we wipe down our workstation, the bell rings. Dismissal. I can finally get out of here. I won't have to deal with Allison for a whole other week until our next lab. I grab my backpack from under the table, ready to go meet Daisy by our lockers. But before I can get going, a hand reaches out to grab my arm. When I turn around, Allison is behind me. She's got her straight brown hair tucked behind her ears, and she's staring at me with her muddy eyes through her thick glasses. "Tom," she says, "we need to talk. Now."
Chapter 24. Before. Tom.
"We need to talk now."
Allison's face is dead serious as she says the words to me. There are bags under her eyes, and I get a quick glimpse of what she might look like when she's much older. Allison seems like the kind of person who was born middle-aged. I can't talk, I mumble. I've got to meet Daisy. It's not entirely a lie. I do have to meet Daisy. But that's not the reason I don't want to talk to Allison. It's important. She tilts her head to look up at me, and I suddenly realize how short Allison is, even smaller than Daisy. There's something about her that makes her look taller, especially since most of the time during lab we're sitting down. But standing up, she barely comes above my shoulders. It won't take long. Some quality in her voice makes me feel like I don't have a choice in the matter. One way or another, Allison and I are going to have a talk. I may as well get it over with. Fine. The bell is already rung and the kids are filtering out of the school. Daisy is waiting for me by her locker, so I tap out a quick text message to let her know I'm going to be late. I need to concoct a fake story to explain why, but I'll worry about that later. A few doors down from the biology lab is a classroom that looks empty. Allison grabs me by the arm and pulls me inside. I only start to get really nervous when she closes the door behind us. What is this all about? What did she want to say to me that she doesn't want anyone else to hear? What is it? My voice is filled with irritation to cover up my anxiety. What is so important? Allison looks up at me. The lights are out in the classroom, and even though the windows are providing some natural light, the shadows on her face look ominous. I want you to stay away from Daisy. What? You heard me. Daisy is my girlfriend. Despite everything, whenever I say those words, I get a surge of happiness. Daisy is my girlfriend. I'm the luckiest guy in the world to be able to say those words. I can't stay away from her. Right, she says. So you need to break up with her. What? You're out of your mind, Allison. I shift my backpack on my shoulder. I'm not going to have this conversation with you. I'm leaving. I start in the direction of the door. My hand is almost on the doorknob when Allison blurts out, I saw you kissing Brandy Healy. Okay, she's got my attention. I turn around, letting my backpack drop to the floor with a resounding thump. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't lie about it, Tom. Her voice is seething with hatred. She despises me. I saw you, outside the back of the school, just a few days before she disappeared. And it wasn't just a peck on the cheek. You were making out with her. I'm going to be sick. I didn't think anyone saw that. I didn't think anyone knew, except for me and Brandy, and then just me. Now, apparently, Allison knows too. This is a problem. You're the boyfriend, she continues. The mysterious boyfriend who was meeting up with Brandy the night she was killed. That is not untrue. You're the one the police are trying to find, she says. Except Brandy didn't tell anyone it was you. But I saw you. I lean against one of the desks, trying to get my thudding heart under control. I drop my eyes, unable to look at her. I wasn't her boyfriend. It was just that one kiss. It didn't mean anything. So why were you meeting with her secretly late at night? I don't know what to say to that. I'm not going to lie. Brandy and I shared a very intense kiss. I'm also not going to lie and say I didn't enjoy it. But I finally decided that was as far as it could go. Even though I hadn't worked up the nerve to tell her my feelings yet, I was in love with Daisy. I didn't want Brandy, even though she seemed to want me very badly. The night I was supposed to meet up with Brandy, I planned to tell her exactly that. But then, she never showed. Did you tell anyone? I ask. No, she says, and I'm not going to, as long as you leave Daisy alone from now on. She's not going to be happy about that. She'll get over it. I'm not going to let you hurt her. I would never hurt Daisy. Frankly, she says, I don't know what you're capable of. Everyone thinks Slug is the creep, and you're the nice one,
because you're polite and smart and good-looking. But you're just as bad as he is. No, actually, you're much worse, because you hide it. He's a creep, but you're dangerous.
That's not true, I croak.
Bullshit!
Her eyes flash. I've worked with you side by side the whole year in biology lab. I see the way you are. How are you so good at the dissections? Nobody is that comfortable just from reading the textbook. You're so into it. What, did you kill animals when you were a kid and take them apart? Isn't that what psychopaths do?
Each word she speaks feels like a punch in the gut. I lean forward, resting my palms on my thighs for support, as I gasp for air. Please, stop talking.
Stay away from Daisy.
Even with everything she's saying, even with all the threats, I shake my head. Don't ask me to do that. I love Daisy. I would never hurt her.
If you truly love Daisy, she says, then you know I'm right. You know she's better off without you. As long as you're dating her, her life is in danger. And I'm not going to stand by and let it happen. I love Daisy too.
Her words hit home. I do love Daisy. But I have dreams about her every night that are like something out of a low-budget horror movie. I don't want anything to happen to her. And there is a tiny part of me that doesn't trust myself. I sometimes worry my relationship with Daisy could very well put her life in danger.
Why didn't you go to the police about me and Brandy? I ask. Why come to me first?
She shrugs, unwilling to answer the question. But I can see the truth in her eyes. Allison is afraid of me. She knows I've covered my tracks very well, and the chief is my biggest fan right now. She's afraid that whatever she tells the police won't be enough to send me to jail, and then she'll have played all her cards. She'll have made a dangerous enemy out of me, and she doesn't want that. She is that scared of me.
I'll give you a few days to think it over, she says. Then I'm going to talk to Chief Driscoll.
If she tells Daisy's father that I was Brandy's secret boyfriend, there's a chance he might not believe it. But there's a bigger chance he'll never let me near Daisy again. That alone will end our relationship. Allison has created an impossible situation for me. I love Daisy, but every path I choose will lead to the end of us. I don't know what to do. Daisy is waiting for me by her locker, as promised. When she sees me, her whole face lights up. I recognize the expression because it's exactly how I feel right now. Every time I look at her, I find myself grinning like an idiot.
Tom!
She picks up her heavy backpack from the floor. I'm ashamed to admit, I haven't offered to carry it again since that first day.
Is everything okay?
Sure, everything is fine. It just took a little longer to clean up after lab.
Everything is fine.
Except we might have to break up because your best friend caught me kissing that girl who was murdered, and she's going to tell the police chief, who happens to be your dad. Other than that, everything is great.
You look...
She cocks her head to the side.
Are you sure you're okay?
Uh-huh. I force a very crooked smile. Let's go. I follow Daisy outside, and we start on the path to her house, without any detours, as I promised her father we would. The weather has gotten considerably warmer. All the snow that had stuck around during the winter is long gone. Usually, I'm not a big fan of snow. But now, I wish it had stayed around even longer, so I could have had more time before they discovered Brandy's body, even though it was inevitable.
I'm sorry my father is making you walk me home every day, she says. I know it's kind of silly. It's not like some guy is going to jump out of the bushes and kill me right in broad daylight.
I reach out for her hand.
I don't mind walking you home. Are you sure?
It's the best part of my day, I answer truthfully. Daisy beams at me.
Mine too.
I love you, Daisy. I have loved you since the moment I first saw you. I'd do anything to keep from having to give you up. But I don't know if there's another way.
My father is trying to convince me not to go away to college.
She rolls her eyes.
As if I would stick around here after I graduate.
Where do you think you're applying? She flashes me a shy smile.
I'm not sure yet. Where do you think you're applying?
I'm not sure either.
Well, when it comes time, she says, we should compare lists. Don't you think so?
A couple of weeks ago, a comment like that would have floored me. Other guys might want to play the field in college, but that's not what I want. All I want is to spend the rest of my life with Daisy. And now, because of Allison, that's going to be impossible. Although, to be fair, it was pretty much impossible before. I was deluding myself if I ever thought otherwise. I love you, Daisy, I blurt out. She stops walking, taken aback. Her pale eyelashes flutter as she absorbs my declaration. I don't know why I felt the need to say that. Maybe because I sensed that if I didn't say it now, I would never have another opportunity. Because there is a really good chance that in the next week or two, she's not going to feel the same way about me. In a week or two, she might not be speaking to me anymore. She might even be afraid of me. So I had to tell her how I really feel while there is still a chance she might appreciate it. Although looking at her face now, I'm not sure if it was a good idea. She says. Oh, Christ, I made a mistake. I should never have said that. Stupid. Never mind? No, I mean... I pull my hand away from hers because it's gone clammy. I was being dumb. I shouldn't have said that.
Yes, you should.
She reaches for my hand again, taking it in hers. Her hands are always so soft. How does she get them so freaking soft? She must use a special lotion.
Because I feel the same way. I love you too, Tom.
And as Daisy kisses me, I realize that I will never be as happy again as I am at this moment. I try to remember it and savor it, because very soon, things are going to get really bad.
Chapter 25. Present Day. Sydney. I look like the victim in some kind of slasher film. I have locked myself in the bathroom at the coffee shop, waiting for Mystery Man, aka Tom, to return with a clean shirt for me. I have managed to clean off all the blood on my face, but I stupidly chose to wear a pale pink color. It looks bad. If I had to walk home this way, I would definitely get some stares. There is a non-zero chance somebody might call the police. On top of that, I don't exactly look my best. It's hard to look like a movie star after you've just lost half the blood in your body out through your nose. Part of me wishes that Tom would ask to reschedule our dinner for another night. But another part of me feels like if we do that, I'll never hear from him again. There's a knock at the bathroom door, and when I pull it open, Tom is standing there with a white shirt crumpled in his hand. He thrusts it in my direction. Small, right? I accept the shirt and hold it out in front of me. Oh, no. I am not wearing a shirt that says, I love New York. He smirks at me. Why not? Don't you love New York? I'm going to look like a freaking tourist. At least you won't look like a murder victim. I can't deny that he has a point. I reluctantly keep the shirt and lock myself back in the bathroom. I remove the dirty blouse and slide on my new, embarrassingly touristy t-shirt. Well, it could be worse. At least it doesn't have a picture of an apple on it. And I do have a jacket I can hide it with. I smooth out my hair and apply a fresh layer of lipstick. After another minute, I feel almost presentable again. I attempt to squeeze the blouse into my purse, but it's a lost cause. My little delicate purse fits my wallet and not much else. I guess I'll have to throw it out or else hold it in my hand for the rest of the date, which is not an appealing option. I pull open the bathroom door and Tom is waiting there, wearing a light thin slate jacket, his arms folded across his chest. once again, I am struck by how handsome he is. He flashes me a thumbs up. Looks great. I only wish I'd gotten you the Statue of Liberty snow globe to go with it. What do I owe you for the t-shirt? This awful thing probably cost like $50. Don't be silly. It's my treat. Well, thanks. I hold up my bloody blouse. Not to be gross, but I'm not sure what to do with this. It doesn't fit in my purse. He pats his jacket. This thing has huge pockets. Give it here. I'm impressed that he's not so grossed out by my blood-soaked shirt that he's unwilling to touch it, and that he'll even risk staining his pockets. Then again, he is a doctor. You ready? Tom asks. If we walk over to 6th Street, we'll have our choice of a bunch of great Indian places. As long as you like Indian food. Love it, I say. He grins at me. Look at that. We've got something in common. We head through the coffee shop, and Tom holds the door for me. I've been on a lot of dates, but it's actually rare for a man to hold the door. On top of everything else, he's a gentleman, too. By the way, I say, I don't want you to think I get horrible nosebleeds like that all the time. Good to know. He cocks his head thoughtfully. That was an impressive spontaneous epistaxis, though. I mean, it wasn't that dry in the coffee shop. I hope you weren't picking it. Even though he's teasing me, my face flushes scarlet. No! I remember that first time we met, you had... He touches his forehead, where I had been attractively gushing blood on our first meeting. You know. I may as well be honest. He's got to suspect something, and it's better he knows the truth than thinks I'm a picker. Actually, I have a mild bleeding disorder. Oh, yeah? His black eyebrows shoot up. Von Willebrand's disease? Factor X deficiency? Factor 2? Von Willebrand's disease, I confirm, before he can keep guessing. I'm slightly impressed. Even my primary care doctor didn't seem to know much about it. He had to Google it right in front of me. It's the most common inherited bleeding disorder. He grins sheepishly. Sorry, I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to this stuff. In med school, I was always the kid who knew way more than I needed to for the test. But it does sometimes come in handy at work. Tom doesn't seem like any kind of nerd. He actually seems pretty much perfect, to the point where it's annoying. He's gorgeous, clearly very smart, charming, and he's a doctor. Of course, I've had a bit of an aversion to the idea of dating a doctor ever since what happened to Bonnie. Although now I'm convinced that guy was lying about his profession as well as everything else. In any case, most women don't have any aversion to dating doctors. But he's in his mid-30s and still single, so there must be something wrong with him. Probably serious commitment issues, like half the other single guys in their 30s. We arrive at the Indian restaurant, and again, Tom holds the door open for me. I am inspecting everything he does, watching for the usual red flags. He doesn't refuse to sit at the first place we are brought to because he must be sitting, like, due north or something. He doesn't inspect all the silverware for imperfections, and when we are seated, he doesn't declare that there's a weird smell in the restaurant and we have to leave immediately. He, in fact, pulls out my chair for me, which is refreshingly sweet. You have very good manners, I tell him. He looks pleased by the compliment. My mother taught me. Oh, a mama's boy. I wait for some extended soliloquy about his sainted mother and about how no woman will ever live up to her. But it doesn't come. He is still frustratingly perfect. Are you close with your mother? I ask. He lifts a shoulder. Somewhat. My dad died of a heart attack when I was in high school, so it's just been me and her since then. Oh, I clasp a hand over my mouth. I'm so sorry. My father died of a heart attack a few years ago, and it was so sudden and devastating. It must have been even harder at such a young age. Yeah, he says, although his jaw tightens. It's clear he's not eager to talk about his father's death on our first date, and I can't say I blame him. Time to change the subject.
So, I say, where do you work?
I'm at NYU.
Nice, not far from my apartment. And what kind of doctor are you?
He hesitates, like he's not sure he wants to tell me. I'm a pathologist.
A pathologist? Isn't that the kind of doctor who cuts up dead bodies all day?
He frowns as he makes a little tear in the napkin in front of him. That's not all a pathologist does, you know. If you have a tumor and your doctor takes a biopsy, a pathologist is the one who looks at it under the microscope and tells you if you have cancer or not.
Oh, my cheeks burn. I'm sorry. So, is that what you do? Look at tumor samples under the microscope?
Well, no, he admits. I'm a medical examiner, so I mostly do autopsies.
So you cut up dead bodies all day?
He makes a face at me.
And you enjoy that?
Well, it's my job. I find it intellectually stimulating, if that's what you're asking.
Okay, so the guy cuts up dead bodies for a living. That's interesting. Maybe there's a good reason why he's still single.
What do you do? He asks, clearly eager to change the subject.
I'm an accountant.
His face relaxes. Oh, that's great. Very practical.
Thank you. I was considering becoming a fortune teller, but then I was like, no, not practical. Accountant would be better.
He laughs. I can see why somebody might get stuck between those two career choices.
Anyway, I say, I enjoy it well enough.
I clear my throat.
That is to say, I don't hate it.
I might have some questions about my 401k to ask you.
Get in line. He laughs again, his eyes crinkling in a way that I find undeniably sexy. I love the way he's looking at me. Part of me feels like he is way out of my league, but he's not looking at me that way. He's looking at me like he wants to throw me on the table and make love to me right now, but is too polite to do so. The waitress brings us glasses of water and offers to take our order. I've barely had time to glance at the menu, so I just get my favorite, chicken tikka masala. I appreciate the fact that Tom lets me order first and doesn't pass any sort of judgment on my food choices or pressure me to order something I don't want. He also doesn't stare at the waitress's rather large breasts. You know, he says after the waitress leaves, I wanted to ask you for your number the first time I met you.
Why didn't you?
Are you kidding?
He sips from his glass of water.
You just got attacked by your date. What kind of asshole do you think I am? And also,
he pauses.
I was sort of at the tail end of a relationship then.
Oh, I raise my eyebrows. A serious relationship?
Not exactly.
He shifts in his chair, obviously not excited to talk about it.
Anyway, it's over now. Definitely over.
My eyes fall on his left hand, verifying once again that his ring finger is bare. And he doesn't have any wedding band tan lines either.
Have you ever been married?
No, never. He grimaces slightly when he says it, as if it upsets him that he has never been married.
You?
No, never. But I'd like to get married.
Oh my God, why did I say that? You never, ever say that on a first date. It's a cardinal rule.
There's something about this guy that makes me let my guard down.
I mean, someday.
Well then, Tom raises his water glass.
Here's to someday.
And as we clink our glasses together, I wonder if it's possible that Tom could be my someday.
Chapter 26. Before. Tom. My Uncle Dave, my mother's sister's husband, had a heart attack a couple of days ago. My aunt and uncle live in Seattle, and my mother is flying out to see them. When I was little, I used to go with her whenever she went for a visit. But I've got school now, so I have to stay behind. With my father. I'm not thrilled about it being just him and me in the house. But on the other hand, he'll probably just ignore me. He's got work, and I've got school.
There's a chance we might not even see each other at all the whole time my mother is gone.
Be good for your dad, Tommy,
my mother tells me, before taking off in her Chevy for the airport. Yeah, like I'm the one who gets drunk and starts throwing things in our household. Okay. She wrings her hands together.
Just leave him alone, okay?
Okay. She kisses me goodbye and promises to call as soon as her plane lands. Like I'm going to be sitting around worrying that my mom's plane crashed. I've got much more important things to worry about. For example, it's been 2 days since Allison's ultimatum, and Daisy is still very much my girlfriend. Allison keeps shooting me warning looks, but I still haven't made a move to end the relationship. I keep hoping something will happen, and I won't have to do it, even though that's impossible. I can't let Allison go to the police. Daisy told me in confidence that the police aren't having any luck finding out who killed Brandy, and they're pinning all their hopes on finding Brandy's secret boyfriend. I can't let them know I'm the guy they've been looking for. If Daisy's father weren't so nervous about her safety, I would have liked to take her out to dinner tonight. But instead, I cook myself the skirt steak my mother had in the fridge, and I'm eating a late dinner at the kitchen table when a text pops up on my phone from Daisy.
Dinner. Bored. What are you doing?
Dinner.
What's for dinner?
Steak. Made it myself.
Yum! Will you make it for me sometime?
I'd be happy to let Daisy come over for steak, if only your dad would let her. I'd make her a whole feast. I'd attend culinary school just to make her happy. I'd do anything for her. Anything. I can't break up with her. I just can't. There's got to be another way. The front door slams, and I shove my phone into my pocket. My father must be home from his job at the hardware store. He always complains that he's doing menial labor, but he's lucky to have the job, considering he shows up for work drunk half the time and hungover the other half. Sure enough, when he stumbles into the kitchen, his eyes are slightly bloodshot and he stinks of whiskey. He must have stopped by the local bar, O'Toole's, on the way home, which is what he does most nights.
Where's Luann? He demands to know.
I'm sure my mother told him 100 times where she was going, but it doesn't surprise me he's forgotten. Mom went to see Uncle Dave.
It's always something with her,
my father grumbles under his breath. I don't know what to say. It's rare that my mother isn't home for dinner. She only goes to see Aunt Gloria twice a year.
So where's dinner? He barks at me. I'm starving.
I look down at my own plate. I only cooked one steak, and I've almost finished it. I don't know. He glowers at me.
So you make yourself dinner, and you don't bother to make anything for your old man, even though I'm the one who puts the roof over your head and pays for all the food?
I didn't know you'd be home.
Unbelievable, he mutters. You'd think you weren't raised to have any manners.
He stumbles into the kitchen, but instead of going for the refrigerator, he goes for the liquor cabinet, which is filled with bottles that are all nearly empty. Liquor doesn't last long in our house. He rattles the bottles.
What the hell, boy? Where is all my whiskey?
You drank it? He slams the liquor cabinet shut, hard enough that the entire kitchen seems to shake.
Don't lie to me. I know you're sneaking drinks from my stash.
I'm not sneaking drinks. Not even close. I've never even tasted alcohol. I won't touch the stuff after seeing what it does to my father. But I know him, and once he gets an idea into his head, it's hard to dislodge it. If he thinks I'm swiping his liquor, he's never going to let it go.
You know,
he says, taking a step toward me,
you're not too big for a beating.
As he says the words, he reaches for his belt buckle. When I was younger, my father beat me with his belt buckle a handful of times, just enough for me to learn to stay out of his way. My mother was always the one who took the brunt of his abuse. I'm going up to my room, I say. There's plenty of food for you in the kitchen. He snorts, although his hand leaves his buckle.
What are you going to do up there? Talk to your girlfriend, the police chief's daughter?
I stiffen. I had no idea he knew about Daisy and me. The thought makes me uneasy. My father is amused by the look on my face.
You think I didn't know? Your mom told me all about it. That girl is much too good for you, you know.
He's not entirely wrong.
Yeah, I mumble. Feel free to invite her over here.
He winks at me.
That Daisy Driscoll is a pretty one. I wouldn't mind having a shot at her. Be nice to have a break from your mom's saggy tits.
Nothing my father said before now had really bothered me. His threatening me with a belt buckle isn't anything new. Accusing me of stealing his crap is par for the course. But I don't like the way he's talking about Daisy. I really, really don't like it. He can see that his needling finally got to me, and a grin spreads across his ruddy face.
I saw her walking down the street the other day, he goes on. She was looking good. Don't the Driscolls live on Peach Street? And isn't her bedroom the one in the back, on the second floor?
My hand balls into a fist at the thought of my father getting anywhere near Daisy.
I bet she'd like that. He licks his lips. Not like anything you could do would satisfy her.
Leave her alone, I say through my teeth.
I'd make her real happy.
The alcohol fumes coming out of his mouth are enough to make my eyes water. And there's another stale odor, one I can't identify.
Whether she likes it or not. But I think she'll like it a lot.
I don't even quite realize that I've grabbed the knife I'd been using on my steak until it's in my hand, and I'm aiming it at my father's chest. Don't even think about going near Daisy. He looks down at the knife and up at my face. It takes him a second to burst out laughing.
Are you kidding me, boy? Didn't we try this once before? And it didn't go so good for you?
We did do it once before. But this time he's not getting the knife away from me. My grip is ironclad. Stay away from Daisy! It's hard not to appreciate the irony of the fact that those are the same words Allison said to me a couple of days ago.
I don't think I will.
Blatantly disregarding the knife, my father reaches into the liquor cabinet and selects a bottle of whiskey, even though it's nearly empty. He finishes off the last dregs.
In fact, maybe right after this I'll go over and say hello to your sweet little Daisy.
He looks down at the knife.
Why don't you put that thing away before you get hurt?
I have watched my father beat my mother with his bare hands. I have felt him smack me across my backside with a belt, but I have never hated him quite as much as I do when I plunge the blade of the knife deep into his gut. The knife is sharp. I sharpened it only about a week ago on the edge of one of the ceramic mugs, just like my mother taught me. The blade slices cleanly into his belly, and then, when it's inside, I twist it once for good measure. It's only after I pull it out again that I hazard a look at my father's face. His face is frozen in a look of utter shock. His mouth is hanging open, and his usually ruddy skin is turned ashen.
Tom!
He gasps as he clings to the kitchen counter. And then he collapses to the floor. He's bleeding badly. There's a puddle of blood forming below him on the floor, but it's not 5 pints. It's not enough to kill him, not even enough for him to lose consciousness. He is still alive, and he's trying to get back on his feet. He manages to get on his hands and knees, but that's the best he can do.
Tom!
He coughs, and his spittle is red when it lands on the linoleum.
I didn't know you had it in you.
Maybe he didn't know, but I knew.
Tommy!
His speech is slurred, and I'm not sure if it's from the alcohol anymore.
You gotta call an ambulance, kid. You gotta help your dad.
When he looks up, his brown eyes, the same color as my own, meet mine. And that's when he knows I'm not calling an ambulance, that I'm going to let him bleed to death on the kitchen floor. He feels around in his pocket for his phone. It's not there. He's always leaving it behind at the bar or maybe at work. So I'm guessing that's where it is right now.
We've got a landline next to the sofa, but considering he can't even make it to his feet, it may as well be across the ocean. Still, he tries for it. I stand frozen in the kitchen as he crawls across the kitchen floor, leaving behind a trail of smeared blood. He manages to make it onto my mother's favorite shag carpet and almost collapses, but he doesn't. The bastard is stronger than I thought he was. He might actually get to the phone. Either way, he's not dying anytime soon. And that's when I realize I've got two options. One, get my father to a hospital so they can save his life. Two, finish him off. It's not a hard decision. I've done it in my dreams a million times before. I stride across the kitchen, careful not to slip on my father's blood. I'm tracking bloody footprints all over the place, but I'm not sure it matters at this point. I step in my father's path, blocking him from moving forward. He reaches out for my ankle, smearing blood all over the leg of my jeans.
"Tommy," he rasps, "please, your old dad is hurt real bad. You gotta help me out."
I get down on my knees beside him. I look into his bloodshot eyes, which are a reflection of my own. "You will never hurt her again," I say. Those are the last words he hears before I cut his throat.
Chapter 27, Present Day. Sydney. Tom and I have a great time at dinner. It's every bit as good as my coffee with Travis. Even better, because I didn't have this kind of electric chemistry with Travis. On top of that, Tom is an excellent conversationalist and seems able to talk intelligently about any topic. And I love the way, when the check arrives, he scoops it up without even giving me a chance to try to pay. "We can split it," I offer.
"You've got to be kidding me. I didn't spend the evening holding doors and chairs for you just to make you give me money for dinner."
"Okay, it's a tiny bit old-fashioned, but I find it incredibly charming. Yes, I can afford to split dinner, but it's sweet that he won't let me. And I love how he helps me with my jacket after I stand up, which I button to my throat so that nobody knows that I love New York. After we leave the restaurant, we linger in front of the entrance. It's gotten nippier, and I hug my jacket around my chest as I stare up at Tom's face.
"Can I take you home?" he asks.
I have found that it is a good general rule for first dates not to let the guy know where I live, especially when he's a random guy I met at a coffee shop, albeit one who came to my rescue previously. Also, I am very worried that if Tom walked me home, I wouldn't be able to keep myself from inviting him upstairs. And once he was upstairs, I wouldn't be able to keep from ending up in the bedroom. Which wouldn't be absolutely terrible, except that I didn't shave my legs. So, I'm going to grab a cab, actually, I say. I'll be fine.
"Okay. Could I have your number then?"
His dark chocolate eyes never leave my face. "Yes, absolutely," I breathe. I read off the digits of my phone number, and he types it into his phone. He genuinely seems like he's going to call me, but you never know. There have been plenty of times when I have been 100% sure I was going to get a call and didn't.
"I haven't been on a first date in a while," he says, "so you have to remind me of the etiquette. If I call tomorrow, is that completely uncool? Will you think I'm a loser?"
My lips twitch. "Well, I already think you're a loser, so you may as well call me tomorrow." He seems to like that answer.
"Also," he adds, "what do the kids do these days on dates? Is kissing on a first date allowed, or..."
I suck in a breath. The thought of kissing this man is almost more than I can bear. "Yes, it's allowed." His eyes twinkle.
"Good."
And then he does it. He kisses me right in front of the Indian restaurant, and it's like every kiss I've had in my lifetime was just practice, working up to this. This is a kiss. It's the kind of kiss where every part of my body melts simultaneously,
and I'm worried that when we stop kissing, I might fall to the floor in a pile of goo. It's that kind of kiss. Although, kissing Jake was quite nice too. I don't want to keep him from getting credit where it's due. When Tom pulls away, the dazed look on his face mirrors my own. I'm glad we're not in my apartment because we would definitely be pulling our clothes off right now. I'm calling you tomorrow, he promises. You better. And then he kisses me again, and it's just as good as the first time. And all I can think is, how did I get this lucky? It's only after I get home that I realize Tom never gave me back my bloody shirt. Chapter 28. Tonight, I have another date with Tom. It's our third date, if you count the one after my epic nosebleed. Thankfully, we got through a second date during which no part of me started spurting blood, and I felt like it was a major win. Tonight, I'm considering inviting him over to my apartment, and it's honestly all I can think about during our 4 o'clock yoga class. What are you smiling about? Gretchen asks me as she rolls up her mat. After Bonnie's murder, we didn't go to yoga anymore for an entire month because it felt like it would be weird without her. But then, Gretchen said her back was hurting without the class, and I was starting to get tense without it, so here we are. And honestly, it isn't that different with just the two of us. I have a date tonight, I admit. Ooh, Gretchen's eyes sparkle with excitement. Is it with Dr. Perfect? That is Gretchen's nickname for Tom. It is weirdly apt. So far, I haven't found anything wrong with the guy. Well, aside from the fact that he cuts up dead bodies for a living. Yes, it is. Wow, you really like him, don't you? I really do. I'm falling for Tom faster and harder than I expected. We've only had two dates, and I'm already fantasizing about the place settings at our wedding and the house we would buy in the suburbs. Of course, I realize how stupid that is. Again, we are only on date three. There is plenty of time to discover that Tom is a total jerk. And yet, he doesn't seem like one. He seems like a genuinely nice guy. Do you think he could be the one? She asks teasingly. It's too soon to know. Liar. You think he's the one. It's all over your face. I can't quite meet her gaze, because she's absolutely right. On the way out of the yoga class, Arlene has put out a plate of chocolate samples. See, this is why I love yoga. We get to spend an hour stretching as we listen to relaxing music, meditate, and then at the end we get chocolate. Gretchen and I both grab a little square. Enjoy, Arlene says. The chocolate is actually made by my friend's company. It's all natural, shade-grown, and ethically traded. And it's over 90% cocoa. Sounds delicious, Gretchen says. Also, she says, I'm so glad to see the two of you back in class again. I wanted to say how sorry I was to hear about Bonnie. Thank you, I murmur. If it helps, she says as she strokes the beads she always wears around her neck. I have been feeling Bonnie's spirit in the studio when you're here. I think she is still joining you in class. I want to say that doesn't help even a little bit, but Gretchen clutches her chest and tells her thank you so much. Despite what Arlene and Gretchen might believe, Bonnie's spirit is not lingering in the yoga studio. My friend is dead and buried in the ground, and nobody even knows who did it to her. And I'm beginning to worry we never will. As Gretchen and I are walking down the steps to the exit, the two of us pop our squares of chocolate into our mouths. We exchange looks, and Gretchen spits the chocolate back into her hand. Oh my God, she cries. It's like eating a square of dirt. I can't quite bring myself to spit the chocolate out, so I suffer silently until I manage to swallow it. Wow, that was some disgusting chocolate. Note to self, never take chocolate offered during yoga class ever again. While I'm looking at the glass door of the building that houses the yoga studio, my heart skips a beat. There's a man standing near the door with a ponytail. Is that the real Kevin? I've been seeing him more than I should just based on pure coincidence. At least half a dozen times since our date, including that questionable sighting at Bonnie's funeral that I've become increasingly sure really was him. A few days ago, I was buying a bagel at a deli, and he got in line behind me. He acted surprised to see me, but I wasn't falling for it. I got out of the line and locked myself in the bathroom until I was pretty sure he'd given up and left. Before that, he came up behind me a few weeks ago when I was buying some gum at a newsstand. He tried to make conversation before I dashed into a subway station. It feels like he could pop up at any minute, and it's freaking me out. Is that the real Kevin outside the yoga studio? Sid? Gretchen frowns. You okay? The guy comes a little closer, and his features come into focus. And oh my God, it's him. It's Kevin, standing outside the glass door of the yoga studio, peering inside at me. Our eyes make contact before I have a chance to pretend not to notice him. He feigns surprise and waves at me. I do not wave back. Who is that? Gretchen asks me. I turn away, hoping he'll get the message that I'm not going to come out and have a conversation with him. It's that jerk I went out with months ago. You know, the one who tried to kiss me and I kneed him in the groin. I think he may be following me around.
You mean the one who you thought you saw at Bonnie's funeral?
I nod. Gretchen rotates her head to try to get a look at him, and I grab her arm. Don't look!
Sorry, I'm sorry.
She pulls me off into the main studio, out of view of the glass door.
This is horrible, Sid. You need to do something about it. I don't even know his full name.
Frankly, I'm not even sure Kevin is his first name. I reported him to Cinch, and I told the detective investigating Bonnie's murder. So what else can I do? And he hasn't done anything, you know, threatening, exactly.
Why are guys such idiots?
It's a question for the ages. It's fine. I'm sure he'll get tired of me eventually. Gretchen seems willing to accept this assessment of the situation. Bonnie wouldn't have let me drop it this way. She'd probably have marched me down to the police station to find out about a restraining order. But she's dead.
Speaking of guys who are not jerks, Gretchen says, I've got some exciting news.
I hate myself for bracing for the worst.
Oh? Randy and I are moving in together.
I instantly forget all about the Kevin sighting outside.
Gretchen, that's amazing.
She looks so happy, and I can't help but throw my arms around her, even though I'm not entirely thrilled. Gretchen could do a lot better than Randy. I might not think he is as creepy as Bonnie did, but there's something about him that makes me uneasy. Still, how am I supposed to say that to my friend? I have no choice but to be happy for her.
It will take me all of 5 minutes to move my stuff to his apartment, she says. I'm basically leaving everything behind. And guess what? This means you and I will be neighbors.
Yay!
I say, managing to muster up an appropriate amount of enthusiasm.
Anyway, she says, I'm heading down to my apartment now to grab some stuff. Do you feel like taking a subway ride?
I shake my head.
Not particularly.
Oh, right. You have your date with Dr. Perfect. She winks at me.
Well, have fun. I'm assuming you don't need a rescue call.
Definitely not. Thankfully, Arlene is able to direct me to an alternate exit to the studio, through the back, so I can avoid Kevin. Gretchen walks off in the direction of the subway while I head back to my apartment building. My date with Tom isn't for a couple of hours, but I need to shower, and I'm probably going to obsessively try on everything in my closet between now and then. While I'm crossing 8th Avenue, my phone starts ringing in my purse. I pull it out just in time for a cab driver to whiz past me, splashing dirty rainwater on my sneakers. All rain instantly turns black the second it hits the New York pavement. Jake's number flashes on the screen. Oh my God, did they figure out who killed Bonnie? The light for the crosswalk is flashing red, counting down the seconds until I get to the other side. They never give you enough time to cross avenue streets. It's like whoever put the timer in these lights thinks we're Olympic sprinters. But even so, I take the call.
Jake? Hey, Sid.
He pauses.
Where are you? It sounds really loud.
I'm outdoors. Outdoors is loud.
Right, right.
He heaves a sigh on the other end of the line.
Do you have a minute to talk?
I grip the phone tighter. Did you find the killer?
No.
Disappointment surges through me. You promised you would. It's been 2 months, Jake.
I know, but...
I step back onto the sidewalk, having successfully crossed 8th Avenue without getting mowed down by a yellow taxi, which is never a given. So why the hell are you calling, then?
I'm just worried about you. I wanted to make sure you're okay.
I don't understand. Why are you so worried? He's quiet for a moment on the other line.
Look, there's something you should know.
Something I should know? This doesn't sound good. What should I know?
We found another victim.
What?
You heard me.
He sounds like he's gritting his teeth.
There was another hit in the database from about 3 years ago. Similar MO to the other two. The missing haircut close to the scalp. Traces of DNA were found that match what we found in Bonnie's apartment.
I stop short in the middle of the sidewalk, suddenly feeling like I can't breathe. Are you serious? So this is a serial killer?
Yes.
But I didn't see anything about that in the paper.
We're doing our best to keep it out of the paper. We don't want people to panic.
You mean, like the way I'm panicking right now?
Look.
Jake sounds far too calm given the gravity of what he just told me.
We are going to find this guy. But in the meantime, keep doing what you're doing. Lock your doors. You're staying off Cinch, right?
Are you worried about my safety? Or do you just want me to die single and alone?
Sydney.
Forget it. I'm kidding. I'm still frozen on the sidewalk. Pedestrians are filtering around me on both sides, several of them shooting me dirty looks. But I can't seem to make my feet move again.
Listen, Sid.
Jake clears his throat.
If you're not doing anything, I could come over tonight to keep you company. I'll bring Chinese food. We don't have to talk about the case at all. We can watch a movie or something.
My mouth drops open slightly. Are you asking me on a date?
No. I'm just saying, if you want some company tonight. You were saying you don't want to be alone, so I thought.
Well, you don't need to worry about me. I actually have a date tonight.
You do?
I try not to feel offended by how astonished Jake sounds.
With who?
A man in a puffy coat actually gives me the finger for my audacity to be standing still for 5 seconds on a New York City sidewalk, which buoys me to start walking again before someone cuts my throat. With none of your business.
I'm not trying to be nosy, Sydney, he says. I'm just worried about you.
Well, no need to worry. He's a really good guy, and I like him a lot.
Oh.
Jake's voice drops a few notches.
Well, that's great. I'm happy for you. You deserve a great guy. And you trust him?
Jake!
All right.
He sighs.
I'm just saying, please be careful. And if you have any concerns about the guy at all, if you want a background check or whatever, just give me a call. Anytime.
I have to admit, Jake has a way of making me feel safe. He is so tall and strong and serious. Back when we were dating, it was like I had a bodyguard looking after me at all times. It's comforting to know that even though we're not together anymore, he is still looking out for me. But I don't need him to look out for me. I've got Tom, after all.
Chapter 29. Before. Tom.